on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Friday, September 26, 2025 edition. And guess what? There are only two more trading days left in this quarter, and we'll soon embark on the final quarter of the year, which usually the first part of the fourth quarter is interesting. The second half, usually not so much, but you know, we're in interesting times, so anything can happen, and we are here to unpack it all for you. I'm Justin Klein, and my objective, as always, is to help you become a better investor. So I want to help you understand the market dynamics and how they might affect your portfolio, what the opportunities are in the marketplace, as well as the potential pitfalls. And that's what this hour is about. And it's about answering your finance and investment questions, as well as giving you data and perspective that you can take those back with you and apply them to your own personal situation. So just a bit, we'll talk about today's market activity and performance, but as usual, run down the show topics, and we'll tackle this caller question now.
Hey, Justin and Luke. I was just wondering what you guys thought about Everest Group, ticker symbol EG. I'll listen for the answer on the show. Thank you.
All right, looking at Everest Group, EG is the symbol. And for most of you, this is probably too boring for you. It is an insurance company offering reinsurance and insurance products in the United States and worldwide, about a $14 billion market cap. And once again, isn't exciting, but it's a consistent business, consistent, solid business. And you tend to like those businesses that have good free cash flow, about $5 billion on a $18 billion enterprise value. That's pretty good. And it's in a consistent uptrend. Once again, not exciting, but and not going to blow the doors off of the market in any given year. It's one of those. It's probably not the worst stock performance for the year or the best. It will never be one or the other, but it will have kind of consistency. So, for example, the 5-year total return is about 13.8% annualized. That's pretty good. 13.8% annualized. Now, the index is about 16, but obviously that's very top-heavy and very tech-heavy. This is going to have a lot less volatility than most other companies, right? So that's what I like about it. Earnings are supposed to be up 57% this year to $46.93. It's a $349 stock. And next year it's supposed to earn $60.38. So that's a pretty reasonable forward-looking multiple, to be honest with you. Now, earnings are up and down because they're in $66 in 2023, then only nearly $30 last year, down 55%. So it can be all over the board. But once again, if you zoom out to a weekly or monthly chart, it's just in an uptrend because it's a consistent business with good cash flows. So I'm going to give Everest Group a thumbs up based on its current valuation, its broader trends, profitability, cash flow, et cetera. And boring business, but usually those have some of the best returns long-term. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and this is what we have planned, or at least some of it. Our main focus point is about a comfortable retirement. Is $2 million enough to retire comfortably? We'll look at some of the factors to consider. In addition, we have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to safe havens. They are becoming increasingly more rare. So how to think about safety in an environment where government bonds are no longer a sure bet. Go look at that. Also, there's a new report coming out of Harvard around AI, the quality of AI output. Okay, so we'll look at that story as well. We also have voice bank calls. One is on Data Vault, DVLT, and the other is Diamondback Energy, FANG. And of course, we have some questions that came in from the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. And most importantly, will be your live calls. I know it's Friday. Everyone wants to get to the weekend, but it's never too late to pick up the phone, give us a call, and get an answer to something that might be in your mind. And frankly, probably on someone else's mind that's listening as well. So not only are you helping yourself, you're helping others as well. But we're going to head to a quick break. I'm ready for your calls right now at 888-99-SHARP.
It's happening in less than a week. Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are going to help you move past the familiar names to identify the key opportunities for investment in the real AI revolution. They'll be talking about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com. There's value in every InvestTalk podcast, so call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
You know your business inside and out. Gusto knows payroll, compliance, and benefits as well, so you don't have to. Sounds like a match made in heaven, right? Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all in one, remote friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Gusto helps you save time with automated tools built right in, offer letters, onboarding materials, direct deposit, and more. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it. Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Get direct access to certified HR experts to help support you through any tough HR situation. It's quick and simple to switch to Gusto. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/investtalk and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/investtalk. One more time, gusto.com/investtalk.
InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 8899-24278. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's take a quick look at the markets overall. And it was a bounce back day after a sell-off yesterday. You did get the S&P up about 0.6%, and the NASDAQ was up about 0.4%. Dow was also up about 0.6%. So certainly the value side of the market outperformed a bit on the day. You did have names like Apple down 0.5%, Meta down 0.7%, Nvidia was roughly flat. So really the only red in the market today was in the tech space. Oracle, Palantir, Meta, Apple, Cisco, AMD, Broadcom, GE, GU, those are the names that were down. Costco also down about 2.9% after earnings. But outside of that, almost everything was flat to higher, especially in the finance space as well. So pretty solid day or bounce back day in markets overall. When it comes to the economic front, you did have core PCE. Core PCE came in at 0.2% month over month, which frankly, was in line with the market expectations. So really wasn't a huge surprise. You did see year-over-year accelerate from 2.85 to 2.91. And that's on the core PCE. The traditional PCE was at 2.74. That's up from 2.6. So we remain in an environment. I said this early in the year. I said we're going to start to see inflation accelerate in the back half of the year, probably closer to the 1%. Right? We were threatening to get down to the 2% earlier in the year, kind of that Fed target, but now we're starting to reaccelerate in the back half of the year. So it's not a surprise here. Not runaway inflation, nothing crazy like you saw in 2021 and 2022, but it's certainly still there. Right? But inflation is not going away, and we don't expect it to anytime soon. So personal income, that was up 0.4% month over month. That was higher than the consensus, which was 0.3%. Personal spending grew 0.6%, slightly higher than the 0.5% as expected. So a little more income, a little more spending. Overall, that's positive for the economy and not a shock to see that PCE number come in at or slightly above consensus. But the market kind of shook it off overall. You did see some social media posts from President Trump on tariffs on patented drugs, heavy trucks, furniture products, etc. So that did drag down some within those areas. You had September U.S. consumer sentiment came at 55.1. Consensus was 55.9. August was at 58.2. So you're seeing consumer sentiment start to recede just a bit as of late as well. And that's kind of how we closed the week. We remain overbought in markets, but nothing. There's no real catalyst, especially on the liquidity front, that's going to tell us, hey, the market's going to pull back in the short term. Anything could happen, but as of now, between now and your end, as long as the trend is in place, the trend is your friend until the end, and the end is not here. Let's go take a live call. John from Santa Cruz looking at NGG, which is National Grid. You own it or looking to buy it?
Hi, Justin. I'm looking to buy it.
Okay.
Maybe, but I noticed they have a lot of debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do have a lot of debt. That's a feature of most utility companies, just the FYI. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is. And now National Grid is what you get with National Grid is you get U.S. production, U.S. exposure, but you also get some foreign exposure as well. They do have a lot of they have big operations in the U.K. If you look at their geographic revenue breakdown, you see that their 63% of the revenue comes from the United States, 36% comes from the U.K. So it's more not internationally diversified versus a lot of other utility companies you might buy. 60% of the revenue comes from Northeast electric utility operations. 33% comes from Europe, Middle East, and Africa utility operations. And then they have some private equity and venture capital exposure as well, which is pretty interesting. So that is how he breaks down here. Once again, 4.25% dividend yields. Their earnings are expected to be at an all-time high next year of $5.88. The technicals are fine. It's just been consolidating here in the low 70s for a little while. Let me look at the other chart here. Yeah, it's just mm-hmm. been kind of consolidating right here around 71, 72, 73 in that range. And overall, that's positive. It's above most of the major moving averages. It's not overvalued, especially if you look on based on forward-looking earnings. And I do like the diversity a bit. So I have nothing wrong with buying NGG if you're trying to gain some exposure to the utility space.
Okay, great. No Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, John. 8899 chart, 8899-242-4278 is how you get through and ask your question. Let's pivot over and answer a new voicemail call.
Hey, InvestTalk. Just had a question about a stock ticker DVLT. It's DataVault AI Inc. It's up like 160% over the last week. I was just curious why that was. And I noticed that they've been losing money for, about a year. Just thought I would ask why it's so volatile. Listen for my answer on the show. Thank you.
All right. This is interesting. DataVault AI, and it's up, as you would imagine, because of some sort of AI hype. And they're engaged in AI-driven data experiences and valuation and monetization of assets in the Web 3.0 environment. Let's see, acoustic data science and data science divisions. Yeah, around spatial and multi-channel wireless HD sound transmission. You know, I don't know much about the technology. Obviously, a very small company. It's a penny stock, $1.10 price right now. It's a $100 billion market cap. But like you said, they just lose money. The free cash flow, negative $21.5 million. Okay. They are serial issuers of stock, especially since the latter part of last year. It's 7.7 million shares outstanding. Now they're at 97 million shares outstanding in basically less than a year. Less than a year. The number of shares outstanding have gone up 10x. So that's why the stock price has gone since 2021. It peaked around split adjusted $76,000. Now it's at $1.09. So it's a penny stock. It's bouncing along the bottom. And obviously, this is a very, very poorly ran company. Revenues are rising, but last quarter, revenues were 1.7 million. Not 1.7 billion, but 1.7 million on a $200 million market cap. Obviously, that's pretty extreme. And, you know, this is all around. You'd have to be a very big fan of their technology. I don't know particularly much about their technology, and I would need to do a deep dive and really understand it before I'd say, okay, I'd buy this for a potential buyout. But clearly, based on the trends in profitability and the number of shares outstanding, all of that, I would certainly pass on Data Vault AI, DVLT. Now we're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, and more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
The weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today on InvestTalk is about, or answering the question, is $2 million enough to retire comfortably? That used to be $1 million. Oh, if I'm a millionaire, I just have $1 million, I have enough. Well, obviously, with inflation, that's probably no longer the case. So the standard answer now is, okay, I need $2 million. And the simple, well, I don't say the simple, the answer to whether $2 million is enough is, well, it depends. And this is where financial planning comes in. This is what I do with clients all the time. We did it with a client today. And it depends on a lot of factors. So things like cost of living, your spending habits, and how long you think you'll live. These all play a role, as well as what other income you might have. So things like Social Security, pensions, part-time work, etc. So let's go over the various factors and really dig into each one. Now, the first is when you choose to retire. Are you retiring at 62 or 67 or 70 or maybe 55? All of these create varying complexity when it comes to the planning process. And a big part of that is Social Security, when to take Social Security, as well as Medicare, when that kicks in at 65. So if you're retiring at 62, well, then you got to pay for your own healthcare for 3 years before you get to Medicare. If you're retiring at 55, well, now you got to pay for your own medical insurance for a decade. And then also, you're not paying into Social Security as long, so your overall benefit is going to be less. So all this plays into the planning process, once again. So choose your retirement age carefully. So retiring before traditional age typically requires more savings. And Social Security, the longer you can wait to take Social Security, that creates a reliable source of income that can supplement a $2 million nest egg, for example. So this is what we do. We coordinate Social Security timing with needs for income, as well as optimizing tax efficiency. For example, pushing Social Security off to 70 allows for a gap between retirement age, whether it's 62, 63, 65, 67, whatever that is, and taking Social Security, and you can do Roth conversions in that time and do some tax planning and create some tax efficiency. So that's why the timing of your retirement is vital. Then it comes down to your spending habits in retirement. So your lifestyle habits. Now, things like housing, groceries, transportation, healthcare costs, those can vary by region. You don't have a lot of say besides where you live, right? It's just what the cost of living is around there. And usually you're living in an area that you're close to friends or relatives, right? So a lot of people don't have control over that. But what you do have is your lifestyle expectations. Things like how often you're traveling, eating out, supporting family, buying luxury items of any kind. So lifestyle choices greatly impact your retirement. And then there's inflation. So inflation right now is nearing 3%. We talked about that earlier. And historically, over the past 30 years, the natural inflation rate that everyone was penciling in was 2%. It's pretty clear right now that it's going to be probably closer to 3%, maybe even 4% for going forward. Our base case for our client financial plans are 3%, 3% inflation rate. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but a 1% difference year after year after year can mean a lot over a 30 to 40 year period. So don't think that that 2 to 3% difference is minor. It can be very major depending on when you retire and your full life expectancy. And then that's the next variable, life expectancy. By 2050, it's expected that all sexes will live until 80 and a half, roughly. That's going to be the average age or the median age. Okay. So make sure you plan to live longer and maybe even work longer. And that might not be full-time working longer, but maybe part-time as well. And we do encourage our clients, our retirees, to say, okay, if you're going to retire, think about your day-to-day. Think about you getting up every day and doing something. It could be volunteering. It could be working part-time. It could be taking care of kids or grandkids. It could be something, but there needs to be something there. And a lot of times that can be supplementing your income from your portfolios. And then being strategic about your withdrawals. Taking out too much too soon can zap your growth potential and income potential of your assets. So putting buckets. So think of the first bucket would be expenses in between the next 1 to 2 years. That's in cash or high yield money market accounts or high yield savings accounts. Then there's bucket two, which is kind of medium term, 3 to 10 years. Those are lower risk investments. So maybe moderate to low risk. And then your longer 10 plus years, that's where you could take a little bit higher risk as well. And don't think that life events are not going to throw you for a loop. So make sure you're planning for that. And remember that nothing is a one size fits all solution. The 4% rule or whatever, you know, you want to sit down and develop a plan, model this out. It's what we do for clients. So you should have an advisor that's going to do this for you. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story, the sunk cost fallacy, why you can't walk away. We'll dig into that story on Monday, but give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. Have you ever had a breakthrough moment working on something that wouldn't let you stop thinking until you got to the bottom of it? I bet you've experienced that situation more than once. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. Claude's internal and external research capabilities go way deeper than basic web search. Think comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations for clients, turning hours of research into minutes. For example, Claude found connections across 50-plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone: financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/invest.
It's happening in less than a week. The all-new Invest Talk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose wants to talk about momentum trading.
Hello.
How's it going? Are you a new trader, experienced trader? How do we classify you?
I'm an individual investor. Thanks. I've been listening to your show for quite a few months. Great insights. Thank you. I have a simple question.
Sure.
I'm trying to get into momentum trading roughly with a week or 2 week of window, buy and sell within those weeks.
Yep.
How should I be picking my stocks? What will be a good stock that I can look at right now, for example?
Well, I don't have one particular, but the way that when you're looking, what you're trying to do is we call that swing trading in this business. Okay. It's not day trading. I'm not buying today and also selling today. I'm buying today and I'm selling within, call it 2 to 4 weeks. Okay. That's what we call swing trading. I'm not in it for a long time. I'm just in it for that next move. Okay. Now, when it comes to that, there's almost no fundamental work. It doesn't matter what the company does, what earnings are going to be. We call this a price pattern in time. What is price doing? Is it trending higher or is it trending lower? What is the pattern? Is it pulling back into major support? Has it just been consolidating in a particular area? And how long has been doing those things? And that is all you're considering. That's all that matters. It's a technical analysis game. And I'll be honest, there are plenty of people that are good at this game, that understand the rhythms and flows of the markets, patterns like consolidation patterns, wedge patterns, pullback patterns, flags, etc. That, you know, if you have the right tools, you can go identify them and capitalize on that consistently. Now, if you can talk about sectors and you think sector and try to identify sectors that are trending well and kind of jump on the bandwagon of those sectors as well. For example, AI, anything AI related right now, it tends to be doing fairly well, although you are getting a bit of weakness in some pockets. And understand that this is not a 100% game. You are going to have losses. You have to have good risk management, meaning you're going to buy something for a potential move. Know your outs. Know where if it gets below this, I'm out. It's no longer has that pattern. It didn't hold the pattern that I expected to. It didn't hold the support I expected it to, etc. And I'm out. That will happen. Chart reading is an art. It's not a science. And anything can happen from, you know, broader market movements that suddenly impact every company that's out there. You can have particular companies within a sector that's not the company you're playing that gets bought out or comes out with a bad earnings announcement or has a fraud claim or whatever that can kind of start to spread to others within the industry. And all of these are variables that make it so it's not easy. It's not perfect. But if that's what you're trying to do, you're trying to be a swing trader, that's all you care about. You just care about the price, pattern, and time. Learn how to read a chart. Have a good charting tool. Don't be using online free charts or anything like that. Thanks for the call, Sam. Let's go talk to Thomas in Santa Cruz looking at AVUV.
Yeah, hi, Justin. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I have a question about this fund specifically, but also just how value funds work in like long-term practice. Mm-hmm. It seems like to me if you owned a value stock in an ETF, and let's say you own it for 30 years, and as time goes on, that fund, wouldn't those companies, if they did appreciate and their cap got bigger, wouldn't they naturally rotate out of that fund? It seems like you long-term either wouldn't own the same companies, or the fund, if it did own the same companies, it would naturally turn into a mid-cap fund. I'm just trying to understand the concept of how it outperforms and how it rotates. Yeah. Versus owning individual small cap companies, mm-hmm. and what would be the benefit versus an ETF? Thank you so much.
There are some drifts here that you're talking about in different styles. So this is the Avantis US Small Cap Value ETF, AVUV. Now, it can drift in two ways. Now, one is correct that it can drift and will naturally drift if it does well, if the companies within this fund do well. They start to drift into large cap and then you sell it. Now, the idea is that there's more upside potential. So once more upside potential for the fund to rotate it back into smaller cap names, right? So if it goes from, you know, a couple billion dollar market cap to 20 billion, now it's a mid cap stock. It's gone up 10 times. The odds of it going from 20 billion to 200 billion is now a lot less than, you know, the move from 2 billion to 20 billion, right? So you have, it can make more sense to say, okay, it's a mid cap, sell it, rotate it back into a $2 billion name that has the higher potential to go to a mid cap than a mid cap going to a large cap like a 200 million, right? So that is true. There's that aspect that it can naturally rotate out of the successful names. But then there's the value side, and you say, well, no longer become value. And that's not necessarily true because value isn't a size thing. Value is a value thing, a multiple, a reasonable price that it's trading for. Usually growthier names tend to trade at high multiples to sales, to EBITDA, etc., because the market is pricing in a certain level of growth going forward. And more often than not, that growth is overestimated. But those, the handful of names that when they do very well, they will naturally grow out of the value side if their earnings are accelerating very fast. And now it's no longer a value name and it will get trimmed. But it can continue to do well, maybe pay out a dividend, for example, and remain a small cap value name, even though it does very well. It might just pay out a 4-5% dividend plus a little appreciation each year. And it remains a small cap. It remains a value name and it stays in this fund. So it can go a million different ways when it comes to performance and style factor drift. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And referring to this fund compared to other funds for a small cap value fund?
It's a solid fund. It's the Avantis US Small Cap Value ETF. I would say my biggest issue is there's no foreign exposure here. I'm at 2.5% of the portfolio's foreign exposure. Mm-hmm. It is a small cap value. It does tend to have better performance than other small cap value funds. For example, in year to date, it's kind of middling, 48 percentile. So it's about right where the index is. Last year was kind of the same. 2023, it did much better. It was in the 15th percentile. It was up 23% versus the category was only up about 17%. 2022, the category was down 10%. It was only down 5%. So that was the 17th percentile. 2021, it was in the 8th percentile, up 42% versus the category was up 31. So you're getting over the past couple of years, kind of middling. A few years before that, it was really good. Hasn't been around a ton of time to say, okay, this is going gangbusters compared to its category for the last two decades. It doesn't have that track record. But so far, since it came about in 2020, it's done fairly well. I think there's a lot worse funds that you could invest in. So if you're looking for small cap value ETF, this would be a pretty solid one despite its lack of track record.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now, we generally make time as we close the week for a quick rundown of some key benchmark numbers. So let's do that right now. We have the 2-year Treasury yield. Last week was at 3.58% to close the week. This week at 3.64%, up about 6 basis points on the week. Pretty decent move, to be honest with you. And that's all kind of fading a little bit the expectations of aggressive Fed easing going forward. Some of that were remarks from Fed members. Other was economic data that kind of came in fine and is going to put a little bit less pressure on the Fed to ease over the last 2 meetings. The 10-year, however, that one also moved up from 4.14 to 4.17. So about 3.5 basis points there less. So the curve kind of flattened just a little bit. That was interesting and certainly of note. Gold prices, $37.61 per ounce, an $80 increase from last week. So gold remains in a very strong uptrend. Silver today, $46.09 per ounce, a $3.11 increase compared to last week. Huge move for silver. I think it's destined for that $50 mark, and then we'll kind of see where we go from there. But silver doing very, very well and starting to lead in the precious metal space, which also is a very good sign for precious metals in general. Oil, $65.24 an ounce. That's up $2.75 from the prior week. We're still kind of in the range that we've been in for a while now. A year ago, roughly, it was around $67. So we're kind of flat year over year. We're in this kind of mid-60s range where it's still profitable for shale oil to produce, but not to really invest in new production. And you're seeing Saudi Arabia increase their production as well. And they've become the swing producer once again, and they're kind of comfortable with this price. And so I do think oil could accelerate from here into the 70s, especially with a weaker dollar, but overall kind of still in a broader consolidation period that we've been in for a year. Gasoline prices, $3.14, 6 cents decrease from last week. So interesting, oil going up a little bit, but national gasoline prices down. Here in California, $4.64. We only decreased 1 cent compared to last week. In comparison, Georgia averaging $2.88 per gallon today. Now let's pivot over and talk about safe havens. Safe havens in markets. And there's a very interesting trend happening. And it's most notable in countries like France that suddenly, there are sovereign debt bonds, sovereign bonds, that are yielding as much, if not more, than corporate bonds within that country. For example, the insurance carrier AXA, which is a French company, now has yields that are lower than the yield on French government bonds. Historically, when times are tough, there's economic unrest, investors put government bonds at the top. They are the safe haven. They are what you flock to in times of distress because they always pay their debts back. They can increase taxes, they can print their own money, etc. But suddenly, that is starting to be put in question. And not just the smaller emerging markets, but the developed markets as well, like France. And it's not just France. Companies or countries like Germany. And even here in the US, while treasury bonds still yield less than almost every corporate bond out there, it's starting to tighten. And a lot of people would say, well, that's because the economy is fine. But the question is, that why that gap remains tight? Or is there starting to become a premium on those government bonds? And that's staying relatively elevated compared to the corporates, which are suddenly feeling a bit safer in the midst of, for example, U.S. institutions becoming maybe politicized. Think of the Fed being politicized. And so now the safe havens are kind of gone. The main safe haven is diversification, because nobody really knows where the next huge problem will arise from. And it used to be, it will never be the sovereign bond. But now that's no longer the case, especially after 2022. You got all these long-term bond yields rising, and there's still, you know, $1 trillion-plus dollars of notional value of these long-term bonds underwater. And so investors don't want to go out there in the risk curve and take on duration. And so you're starting to see a lack of true institutional ownership of these longer dated bonds that's raising yields and making the difference between those corporate bonds and sovereign debt start to come in, right? And start to converge and then some, like in France. So this is another reason why you are getting a rally in precious metals in a major way. It's not just the Indias and Chinas and Russias of the world that are trying to diversify out of U.S. treasuries, but it's also investors that are trying to diversify out of sovereign debt. We're in a global sovereign debt bubble that is starting to unravel in a broader sense. You know, it's not happening right now in a major way, but it's slowly, right? How do you go bankrupt? It's slowly, then all of a sudden. And I think we started the accelerate the slowly, right? It was slowly for 30 years, but now it's starting to become, it's starting to accelerate faster. And that's what you're seeing and why precious metals continue to rally. Now we're moving into a break, but give me a call now, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. And this week in the KPP Insights section, we discuss the housing market. And in the stock ideas section, we mention an aluminum producer and a fertilizer company. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on political events that affect markets. And if you're interested in learning more, visit investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday.
Yeah, it's Mark Collins from San Diego. It's about tobacco companies. I have Philip Morris, Big Mo, Altura, and British Tobacco. And of course, they're showing some profit right now. I think they're overbought. Wondering if it's time to trim or sell. They're not a large part of my portfolio, but I figure now's maybe the time. So your thoughts. Thank you. Listen on the air.
Well, we own Philip Morris for our clients and have for some time. We bought it in the 60s, 70s, something like that. And it's now $164.89. A big reason for the recent move since the middle of last year, when it was trading in the 90s, is the growth of Zyn for Philip Morris. That is the smokeless tobacco products that have high adoption rates. Now, I believe Altria, has a similar type of product. I don't think it's catching on as fast, and you can see that with its revenue growth. It's still down 2% year over year. And that's why it's trading at a more modest multiple, because it's just, its earnings are growing, but it's only growing because it's buying back shares. It's not growing because they are growing the top line, right? It's just a game of, hey, we're not losing too much sales. We're still producing about $8.7 billion in free cash flow. There's minimal debt, so they can take most, if not all, of that cash that's left over after paying that 6.5% dividend yield and buy back shares. And they're able to manufacture higher earnings per share because of that. And their operating margins remain right around 60%, which is at or a bit higher than they've been for a long, long time. So they're strong operator with strong margins, just not a ton of growth. Whereas you look at Philip Morris, Now, remember, Altria is domestic cigarettes, and there's not a lot of most people that smoke are either passing away from disease or just getting older. And there's not a lot of new smokers that are coming on. And so that's why you see a 2% decline, 3% decline in revenue kind of consistently with Altria as a business. Whereas Philip Morris, they're international only, and at least on the cigarette side. They do have the Zyn, which is domestic, but their cigarettes are international. And that's why you have last quarter revenue growth up 7%, earnings grew up 15%, earnings growth for this year and 11% next year. And the dividend yield is less, but it's still solid, 3.5%. So we rather own the name that's continuing to grow. That's not just relying on buying back shares to grow their earnings per share. Now, they are buying back shares, but they're able to grow their overall profits and net income as well because of that international growth. So we like Philip Morris, but I have no problem, frankly, owning either. So I would just hold them, to be honest with you.
Hi there. I have a question about Advanced Micro Device, AMD. I have a very small position, but I was thinking of selling that, and I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Thanks very much. Bye.
This is interesting. Advanced Micro Devices, and this is a modest AI play. They do have growth because of AI. Revenue growth last quarter was 32%, but earnings were actually down 30%, which is interesting. And remember, they took a lot of share from Intel. And if Intel, due to the investment from the U.S. government, from the partnership with NVIDIA, is going to start to claw back some market share, it's going to be from AMD. So it kind of depends on your view. Do you think that this is a shift change with Intel? I kind of think more likely it is than not. And so I would probably sell AMD because I don't think they're going to hold on to that nearly $6 in expected earnings next year from $3.85 this year. I just don't see that growth. So I would sell AMD mainly on the new uptick in optimism around Intel. Well, I'm Justin Klein. That about does it. And if today's show made you think about your own finances in any way, your investments, your taxes, your retirement planning, that was our main focus point. I encourage you to schedule a free portfolio review with myself. No cost, no obligation. We just go over your situation, your goals and concerns, start to develop that broader financial plan and that investment strategy that would fit your needs and those goals, and bring clarity and confidence to your situation. And all you have to do is head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.